Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the webinar on Startup Policy. This event is being organized by Nishit Desai Associates. The speakers are Mr. Vaibhav Parekh, Partner in Charge of Mergers and Acquisitions, Private Equity and Startup Practice Group, Nishit Desai Associates. Mr. Huzaifa Tavawala, Head, International Commercial Law Practice Group and Technology, M&A Expert, Nishit Desai Associates. Mr. Kartik Maheshwari, Head, Startup Practice Group, Nishit Desai Associates. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Also, you can download our mobile applet, Nishit Mobile, which is available on the App Store for iOS devices, Play Store for Androids, and BlackBerry World to access the current updates and videos. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Vaibhav Parekh. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, and welcome, everybody. First of all, I would like to thank everyone to be there at this point in time, especially at a short notice. And from various parts of the world, welcome to you all. Today we are going to discuss the on the startup, the new policy which has been announced by the government. It was announced on January 16th, Saturday, in Vigyan Bhavan in Delhi. I had good opportunity to be present there. And before we go into the actual policy, I just thought I will tell you what were the key aspects which we saw on Saturday. First of all, there was a lot of good buzz. There were 2,000 people present in the Vigyan Bhavan to attend the event. Out of newspaper reports says that the demand was for 1 lakh people wanting to attend, but only 2,000 could be accommodated. So really, this particular event has taken quite a bit of interest among the startup community. It was very heavily attended. The quality of participants also was good. I think almost all Indian unicorns were present. So were people from Silicon Valley. So were people from TAI and NASCOM. And so were most of the government. In right from bureaucrats to SEBI to ministers, both the finance minister as well as minister of state of finance as well as minister of state of commerce, and the prime ministers. As I said, the enthusiasm was very good. Tremendous energy. You can look from a perspective where there was no lunch break at all, and still people were all inside the room for more than 10 hours. The approach of the government was very business-like. Their whole focus was how can we unobstacle, how can we ungovern, how can we reduce basically the governance from what they do, and that is the theme which even the Prime Minister mentioned. What I see, biggest takeaway, other than the action plan which was raised, I think the biggest takeaway was the change in mindset in the eyes of government. It goes from a fact that this is the first ever startup event at this large scale announced by the government. I don't think it has happened any time before in India. Finance Minister made a statement which says that this is the first time in an event which he is participating, there are no usual suspects. Generally, he would be seeing CEOs or owners of large companies, corporates, conglomerates in the event. And this is the first time possibly he was seeing all the startup companies in the audience. So that is something which really goes on to say how government is thinking in terms of a startup community. government is looking at it, they are looking startup primarily for two reasons. Prime Minister mentioned it in his speech also. He said that startups create jobs. They are basically employers. So if there are more and more startups, you will get more and more employers. And overall, he wants more people having their own business and being an employer than what are there today. So that is one creator of job is what the government is looking at. So secondly, it is also where they can solve problems which are not solved by large corporates. The government very strongly believes that some of the problems really can only be solved by startups, because the way they think and the way they act, I think they may be able to achieve something which even large corporates can't. And that's what we have normally seen even internationally. And so this was kind of a summary of the event which we sent when I was there in the event. Now, having said, I feel that Wali's action plan was a good start or a good first step. I believe it was only a tiny step which government has taken, and there is still a lot more which government should do, and in my expectation, should have done before even on 16. So it's a tiny step. It's not as expected, but having said it, what we understand from government and our discussion with government is that this may not be the only announcement. Over a period of time, there may be more announcements or more relaxation as and when things progress and how it happens. You will see a lot more changes which will work towards ease of doing business for startups. With that, I will go straight into the action plan. And the way we are looking at it, I will ask, I have two experts with me today, Huzaifa Tawawala and Kartik Maheshwari, and I will ask them questions on action plan, and we will have their answers, and if I need to add anything, I will be happy to add. We are looking at discussion for next 45 minutes, post which we can open up to question and answers, and we do hope that there will be a lot of questions, as you know, that's where the main value of this seminar will be delivered. Let me start. Kartik, let me first ask a simple question. Are all startups eligible to claim benefit as per the Startup Action Plan?
Thanks, Vaibhav. The government has laid out certain criteria which a startup needs to fulfill to be eligible to claim the benefits under the action plan. So, I mean, in terms of the entity, it's been classified that a private limited company, a limited liability partnership, or a partnership registered under the Indian Partnership Act, any of these three entities can be eligible. The second criteria is the fact that it must be in existence or be registered for less than 5 years. And the third thing, third objective criteria in this is the fact that it needs to have a turnover of less than 25 crores in the preceding year. The minute any of these two criteria are breached, it'll stop availing of the benefit of being a startup. The other aspect of this definition that the government has proposed is the fact that it needs to be engaged in an innovative business, that it needs to be coming up with a new product or a new service, or a substantial improvement to an existing product or a service. And to this effect, the government has suggested that, you know, to certify the nature of innovative business, the government has laid out that for a startup to be considered as eligible, it would take certification from a government-recognized incubator or an incubator in a government college, or from a private equity fund, an angel investor, or a venture capital fund which has invested in such startups, or a startup which has received a patent. So basically, this is the broad contours under which a startup is defined as per this action plan.
Thank you, Kartik. I'd just like to add a couple of points here. First, there is, at least we have not heard whether government intends to give benefit to startups which are incorporated after this plan comes into effect, or even the previous startups which have been incorporated, let's say, within last 2 years, 3 years, 4 years will be eligible for the period of for the remaining period for the benefits. So I think that is one clarification which government will have to come out with. But having said it, from what we understood, the intention of the government is we believe that even previous startups, as long as they meet the criteria as mentioned by Karthik, they should be eligible, but something we will have to wait and watch. The second point which I would like to mention is that if you note, there is nowhere in the plan which says that it has to be Indian-owned or Indian-controlled, or it should be Indian, promoter, should be Indian resident, etc. Which means that unless the fine print says otherwise, it means that even a Singapore incorporated company or a U.S. incorporated company which has a subsidiary in India, and as long as the subsidiary in India meets the eligibility criteria, they may be in a position to take benefit of the startup, the action plan benefits. So this does not force companies to necessarily incorporate the holding company in India. So that's a that flexibility is limited, and that, in my view, is a positive point. Now let's go to Huzaifa. Huzaifa, if a startup has met with the eligibility criteria, does it automatically take the benefit?
Sure. Thanks, Vaibhav, for providing these inputs, and thanks, Karthik, for introducing the broad definition and eligibility criteria of a startup. Interestingly, the startup action plan also has a process of certification which needs to be undertaken by the inter-ministerial board. So there is a board which is proposed to be set up by the DIPP, which is the Department of Industrial Promotion and Policy. And it says that once the eligibility criteria are met by the startup, it needs to undertake a certification from this particular board. Now, the startup action plan does mention that the certification is specifically or would, enlist startups availing tax benefits. But since we await the fine print, we just need to ensure that for the startups to avail the other benefits under the startup action plan, this particular certification from the inter-ministerial board, which is set up by the DIPP, may not be required. Just one quick comment. In the event if certification by the ministerial board is required, then that may create a huge bottleneck because, and it would also end up defeating the purpose of the startup policy because to gain any benefits or exemptions under this policy, you would first need to go and get blessed by the government. And that may be time-consuming and practically difficult.
Thank you, Zeta. In my view, this is slightly a dampener. We really wanted the government to, first of all, give completely objective definition of a startup so that, that there will not be any subjectivity or ambiguity or something which requires government of India to take any action. So in order for startups to take benefit of what has been given in the action plan. Unfortunately, as of now, it doesn't seem it's going in that direction. There is one major subjectivity of it being innovative in the area of service or product. Secondly, there is lack of clarity, but it seems that if you want to take at least tax benefits, you will need to go and get an approval from inter-ministerial body. Now imagine there will be at least 10,000 startups coming up in a year. If 10,000 startups, if they look at the plan and look at whether they are eligible or not, it is going to be a huge waste of time from government perspective, and it will invariably lead to inefficient usage of, first of all, in terms of delays, in terms of time, and also may lead to corruption. So this is something which we believe, at least we are going to work out the government to try to make it as objective as possible, or otherwise make it widely. For example, if government, wants the startup to be innovative in order for them to get the benefits, which we, in our mind, we shouldn't really regulate at that level. But even if they want it, they should make it, you know, much more widely, you know, it's easy for startups to say whether they're innovative or not. There should be more guidelines available. Today, there is no guideline available of what is innovative. Yes, you know, if somebody certifies, and one of the three X people certify, whether it's incubator or a venture capital or government-based, you know, government-funded, or if they have a patent, then they will be able to get benefit. But there is no guidelines to say what they can use for certification. For example, if there is a existing business model in the U.S., but there is no such similar business model in India, and if someone creates, modifies that for Indian purpose and creates a similar business model, will they be considered to be innovative or they will not be considered to be innovative, right? Any problem you will find multiple companies or multiple startups trying to solve. They may be solving in different ways, they may be solving in similar ways. They may come up with something today and then later on the business model will change. How would you determine which one was innovative? Was the first one innovative? Was all the companies trying to solve the problems are innovative, even though they have similar business models? What if the business model changes later on? Because, you know, one of the things about startup companies is that the business model will keep on changing. Will they suddenly become, you know, not become innovative or not become eligible? So those kind of questions are still open. And the way we are going to put it to government is to try to see if they can simplify it and remove either broad obligation of innovative or bring in a lot more clarity and make it easily available so that it basically reduces, delays from government side and bottlenecks and corruption. So this is something which was an important aspect which I thought I should point out. Let me move on. One of the key reforms is introduction of mobile app. Kartik, do you want to give your input and its use from practical perspective?
Sure. The Prime Minister also announced that this was part of the government's intention to move more governance online to the internet. And as part of this, there were a slew of measures which were proposed to be done via mobile app. And it was also, you know, announced that there will be a website available alongside this mobile app. But the thrust on the mobile app was, the ability to allow anyone anywhere to access governmental services. So amongst the services which have been announced as part of the mobile app is the fact that you'd be able to incorporate a company via this mobile app, which essentially means that there would be a back-end integration with the Ministry of Corporate Affairs, which is the nodal body in charge of, you know, registration of a company. And as part of this process, there are other schemes involved as well, which say that, you know, you'd be able to track the life status of other applications that you've made, or make file applications for availing of benefits under the action plan. But just a word of caution here in terms of practical difficulties which we've been facing with the current setup and would be essentially the fact that, you know, a lot of forms require a fixation of a digital signature. So with a digital signature, how would this be practically enforced in a mobile application? Or in terms of a one-day incorporation, there's a requirement for, you know, a first-time director to obtain certain registration from the Ministry of Corporate Affairs. How would this timeline play out? So the idea essentially is that the government would need to take a holistic view of easing out all of these compliances to make make life easier in that sense.
Thank you. But one point is there that it will definitely be easier than what it is right now. That's great. Josefa, let's move on to self-certification design. Can you tell us a little bit more about the self-certification regime?
Sure, Vaibhav. Actually, the self-certification regime is in relation to specific laws, you know, which are applicable to a startup. There has always been, industry representations which favor startups. When considering their scale and the resources which are available to them, that they should be exempt from, certain compliances and in relation to certain laws. Or in the alternative, there should be a limited or pruned down list, which should apply to them in relation to compliances. The government in the startup action plan has actually adopted a mid path. You know, they haven't gone on the, you know, extremes of either side, whereby they've introduced a self-certification process. So what does that mean? They've actually gone and said that they are empowering the startup to actually go and self-certify that they are going to be in compliance with certain laws. So this self-certification process is applicable to certain labor laws as well as certain environmental laws. And the action plan, the startup action plan also says that there would be no inspection for a period of 3 years, you know, from the date of self-certification. To simplify the entire process, the self-certification program can be accessible through a mobile app, which is any which way, you know, as Karthik mentioned, which will be launched, as well as a dedicated portal, which is also proposed to be launched by the government. Further, to, you know, ensure that this entire regime of self-certification is balanced, there is an exception that in the event a startup is blatantly violating the laws, and if anybody complains, then there can be an inspection by the relevant government officer. Just a small note, you know, just to ensure that there is no abuse of government power, in the event of any inspection on a startup, approval from a senior officer would be required. So this seems to be, you know, a well thought of process which has been proposed by the government under the action plan, though the startups would have ideally wished that a limited you know, scope of laws applicable, or most of the laws are exempt. But nevertheless, a self-certification process seems to be a step at least in the right direction.
Thank you, Zephyr. I hope the next step with government takes is exempting them from complying itself for a particular period of time, because they really need to, kind of really need to focus on their business rather than compliance. And secondly, we hope that government brings other laws also within the purview. For example, Companies Act, today a startup requires a lot of compliance under Companies Act. And maybe one has to think whether are they really necessary. Is this something which we can live without for at least 2 years, or only ask for very limited ones? And this is something which is definitely a thought and a push for government. Hopefully, that may be the next step. Huzefa, let me ask you again. There have been some reforms on IP front, intellectual property front. Could you highlight the reforms and the role of government facilitators in that?
Sure. I think, you know, in today's day and age specifically, you know, where things are moving so fast, one thing which is definitely important and valuable to a startup is this intellectual property. You know, the intellectual property ends up getting a niche to the startup in the market. It also attracts a certain sort of valuation. It also attracts a certain sort of collaboration, you know, in the wide world. The issue with Indian startups in general was a lack of a ecosystem which actually holistically assisted them in the intellectual property which they developed. So there have been situations in which, you know, when the startup does not have resources or has limited guidance, they don't know what to do or how to protect the IP or where to find the intellectual property, or, you know, if they need to go and oppose somebody's intellectual property, how they would do it. Also, that, you know, that there was always, again, an industry representation in terms of expediting the entire patent process. So the government has, you know, taken knee to the R and has actually implemented a legal support and a fast-tracked patent examination and patent filing process, which has actually, they've done two things under this umbrella. The first thing, in terms of patents, they've brought in a regime which actually expedites the entire patent process. And second, they've introduced a concept of a government facilitator. There are going to be numerous facilitators, government facilitators, which are going to work closely with the relevant intellectual property departments. And the job of these facilitators is going to be to help startups, one, in advising them on the intellectual property, second, hand-holding them on the intellectual property, third, helping them with the filings of the intellectual property, fourth, also helping them in terms of hearings and oppositions connected or associated with the intellectual property. Further, the advice on the IP is not only going to be limited to domestic, but it's also going to be more holistic, it's also going to be international, so they're also going to tell them ways and means how to exploit the IP internationally. Now, the good part to all of this is, of course, the cost part, which is sacrosanct for the startups. The government facilitators are not going to charge any money to the startups. This advice is going to be free of cost. These costs are going to be picked up by the government. Specifically in relation to the patent filing fees, there is an 80% rebate which is going to be offered by the government, which is great news. And the entire IP program is a pilot program which is launched, this is going to be there for a period of 1 year. And depending on how the rollout happens, the government is going to take relevant steps. But to sum it up, again, this seems to be heading in the right way, whereby an ecosystem for harboring intellectual property for startups seems to be created.
Thank you, Zefa. I think this is a great move. Only point is what will be the quality of this facilitator. We understand from Prime Minister's speech that there will be patent lawyers or patent agents or IP lawyers. I believe what government may be thinking is to reach out to private practitioners rather than go to the government lawyers. But at this point of time, we don't have a visibility on that. But the quality and the availability will be critical to see how startups benefit from that. So that's a good move, but we'll have to see how the benefit happens. Talking about benefit, Karthik, can you tell about any benefits for startups in public procurement or government procurement area?
Sure. So there's actually been some great news in this space, and I think this, to look at this more holistically, we'll have to look at the fact that from April 1, 2015, all government departments, and this is for the central government, state governments, as well as public sector units, are required to mandatorily source, procure 20% of their requirement from micro, small, and medium enterprises. So with this in mind, what the government has recognized that a frequent grouse of startups is the fact that they can't meet the prior experience or prior turnover requirements that most public procurement contracts have. So what they've said, that they're willing to relax only these two criteria for startups. However, there will be no compromise on quality or the end product which needs to be delivered to the government. So to that extent, this is phenomenal news from the perspective of startups. But I mean, just a word of caution here is the fact that as of right now, the government has said that this is only restricted to the manufacturing sector. So now what's going to be important to see is whether the government eventually decides to extend this to services as well. This is, manufacturing, from manufacturing, whether this gets extended to services as well.
So let me add a little bit here. From the Prime Minister's speech when he announced the action plan and he went through the action plan, it did not seem to me that they only wanted to restrict to manufacturing sector. I think Prime Minister made a very interesting statement. He said that, look, government always asks for someone who has certain size or certain experience. But the point is, if we don't allow you to participate, how can you ever have an experience? Right? So it's a chicken and egg situation. So he mentioned that government will encourage startups without requiring any track record or without requiring it to be certain size. Now that was a critical statement because that was asked by startups for a long time because they, being a startup, they were barred from be a part of a tender because tender would require 3 years experience company and all a certain size, a certain deployment, and which startup would not have because it's a startup. Now that is something which is a good news, but from what Prime Minister said, it didn't seem that they wanted to exclude services sector. Maybe it is unintentional mention of manufacturing sector. We do not know at this point in time. But hopefully services sector also get covered under the public procurement policy. Let's move ahead. Karthik, again, there are big numbers to the tune of 10,000 crores, which is 1.8 billion US dollars, which government has committed to the startup. Any idea how this is supposed to be deployed?
Sure, Vaibhav. Yeah, this clearly made headlines all over when the government announced this. So what the fine print says about this is the fact that the government is going to invest, is going to commit 2,500 crores every year. But what the government has clearly said that it won't be doing is investing these funds directly. So what the intention of the government is that it's going to be investing these funds into funds of funds. And what that essentially means is that it's going to invest it into other funds which are in the business of investing them into downward companies, into investee companies. There are a couple of requirements which they've laid down for, you know, funds to fit the criteria to be eligible to claim of this 2,500 crore corpus. One is the fact that the Life Insurance Corporation of India was going to be a co-investor. Second is the fact that 50% of the fund needs to already have been drawn up by the fund by themselves before they approach the government. And so once they've, you know, raised 50% by themselves only, then they can approach the government for asking the government to fulfill the balance. And another important fact here is the fact that the action plan says that the funds need to be sector agnostic. They need to look at sectors including agriculture or probably manufacturing, which aren't, you know, that attractive to traditional investors. So yeah, this is the fine print on the fund.
So again, the good news is that there will be 10,000 crores or $1.8 billion in the market for investment perspective. So at least that will increase the liquidity available for startups to raise funds. Of course, it's conditional. We'll have to see as and when it is deployed, but this is definitely a welcome move. Josefa, back to you. Let us talk about tax. Any tax exemption the startup is getting under the action plan?
Yeah.
And when can they be availed?
I think this is a big one, right? That the first thing, you know, when you're starting up any venture, every penny is important, or every cent is important. And specifically, you know, when you know, if you're burdened with a certain amount of taxes, that may actually foster your growth, because when you're a startup, you're young, you want to grow the business, you want to just focus on your business. Further considering that, you know, there are working capital requirements, limited resources, at times unavailability of alternate funding, any tax which is paid is, you know, it's always looked down. So what the action plan has actually done is gone and provided an exemption on startups on the corporate tax for a period of 3 years. So currently, for any sort of corporate entity, the corporate tax in India for an Indian company is with education cess and surcharge, ranges up to approximately 33%. The startup action plan has exempted companies for a corporate tax to a period of 3 years. This is great news for startups, because this just gives them more liquidity in terms of their working capital and additional funding requirements. There is one condition, of course, for waiting this exemption for a period of 3 years, is that you know, the startup should not distribute any dividend in the event it has made a profit. So that's one point to note. But yes, of course, considering that if you're a startup for a period of 3 years, the other side of the coin is that how much money you will make, right? You're growing the business and you're not making money. So, you know, could there have been any other alternatives to this 3 year period in terms of extending this period or providing some other tax subsidies? But as of now, the action plan has addressed a period of 3 years exemption on corporate tax.
Thank you, Zefa. So I think, as Zefa mentioned, why it seems to be a big one, really speaking, it's not expected that many of the startups which we see, especially in technology and the area which it currently is in favor, really benefit out of it, because they don't make profit to pay tax in the first 3 year period. You know, it would have been much better if instead of capping against, instead of tax exemption, income tax exemption, they would have given exemption, for example, for service tax or for VAT or for GST, which is likely to come in. That would have given a lot of push to startups. Maybe we will try to see if we can push government to consider that too. Now, having said it, not all startups are the ones which do not make profit. There are very traditional startups which may be not meant for perspective of really scaling up and, you know, in the e-commerce sector or another sector where the whole objective is valuation. Those kind of startups, which may be in maybe non-tech centers in traditional sectors, which may be bootstrapping and really be on margin basis, those startups may benefit by the 3 year tax exemption. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are many of them who take benefit, even though most visible ones, they will not take, they will take benefit because they will not make profit, most likely within the first 3 years. Now let us see how this pans out, but this is a good start for the government. Karthik, also while we are on tax, can you tell us about any capital gain tax exemption for investment in products?
Sure. So just a couple of things before we do a deep dive, right? Firstly, in terms of startups, the question here again would be that, you know, for investment into startups for claiming tax benefits, would you then need to, again, invest only into a startup which has availed of the certification from the Interministerial Board 1? Second would be the fact that the capital gains, there are two major reforms that have been proposed in terms of capital gains. One is, and both are being done with the intention of promoting investment into startups. So what the proposed changes are with respect to any gains which have been made, in the event that in the year that they have been made, they are invested back into, firstly, a fund of funds. As we had discussed the concept of a fund of funds earlier, if you make a gain on the sale of a capital asset, and if this is invested into a fund of funds, the gain that has been made is exempt from capital gains tax. This is the first exemption which has essentially been provided for. This is with the whole idea of increasing liquidity or increasing capital available to startups. The second exemption has been done in terms of currently Section 54GP of the Income Tax Act provides that for the sale of any residential property, if the gains from this sale is invested into MSME, which is a micro, small, and medium enterprise, which is purchasing new assets from this from the subscription amount, the gains will be exempt. So what does this essentially mean? What this means is that in relation to startups, in the event that a gain from the sale of a property is invested into a startup, the consideration that the startup receives, it needs to deploy this consideration for the acquisition of new assets, which is basically computers or computer software. In the event that this happens, capital gains exemption may be availed by the investor who invested this into the company. But just a couple of things, what we need to await for details in the budget, union budget, as to how this would be applied to startups, because currently you're required to hold shares for a period of 5 years to be able to gain to avail of this exemption. And secondly, it's proposed that this exemption will be phased away in 2017. So we'll just need to wait for the budget for more final details on this.
Thank you, Karthik. Just one note here, which was made at the seminar. It is not part of the action plan, and you will not see it in action plan. But what was told is that there was a demand by a lot of people that there is a disparity in the capital gains tax for you know, capital gains tax of a public company which is listed on a stock market versus capital gains tax in a private company. Capital gains tax in a publicly listed entity, if it is sold on the stock market, can be zero, or it can be 10% if it is off the market. On the other hand, private held company where people are actually taking more risk, the capital gains tax, and I'm only talking about long-term capital gains tax right now, can be, would be 22%, or 20% plus surcharge and tax. So there were, there have been a lot of demand to kind of reduce the discrepancy, and what the minister told us during the conference is that in this budget there will be a proposal where this gap will be narrowed. We do not know whether it means that they will reduce the capital gains tax of private investment closer to what is there for a public company, or whether it will be vice versa. We hope it is the first one, and we hope there is a rationalization of capital gains tax and reduced, but that is what we are expecting as an announcement in the budget. With this part on tax, let's move to another tax issue. In India, there was a unique aspect which was brought in a couple of years ago under Section 56 of Income Tax Act, which basically meant that if you are investing in a company which is at the valuation higher than fair market value, then company would have to pay tax for the amount which was invested over and above the fair market value. And this was dubbed as, and this is mainly for domestic investment, it was dubbed as angel tax. So there's a dreaded angel tax which was there, because typically when angels invest, if a company has to pay tax, then that would be disastrous. So there was some announcement with respect to the tax under Section 56 or what was the angel tax. Huzaifa, can you tell us more about what is the proposal here?
Sure. No, thanks, Weber, for this insight on Section 56. You know, as Weber mentioned, that this was a tax that was introduced a few years ago, and it was also dubbed as the angel tax. You know, from an income tax perspective, this falls within the ambit of income from other sources. And the interesting part about you know, the tax on this one, that it also goes and taxes on notional gains. And the tax rate under this head is close to 30%. So as Weber mentioned, that, you know, when a company receives consideration for issuance of shares in excess of the fair market value, then that excess consideration is subject to tax at the hands of 30%, you know, at the company level. So assuming you're a startup, and, you know, if you've received consideration excess of fair market value, then the startup would also be subject to a tax of 30%. Of course, there has been an exemption under the law for a venture capital fund. And, you know, there was a lot of a UN cry whether there could be further, you know, safe harbors or exceptions under this one. So what the government has done is they have extended the exemption to incubators as well, just incubators and not angel investors. So where does that leave us, or where does that leave the startups for, you know, this particular tax head? Now, traditionally, the role of an incubator has always been to provide infrastructure, to provide support to startups. And of course, lately, incubators have also been investing in startups. So yes, that's a welcome sign that, you know, this head would not apply, this tax under 56, 27B would not apply to investments made by incubators. But I think what we need to realize that incubators per se, the very nature, you know, the way they are set up, they have a limited reach. They are not per se investors. And which is why it would have been helpful if this exemption could have also included angel investors along with incubators, because currently, you know, angel investors are still subject to you know, the investments made by angel investors are still subject to this tax head. The other interesting bit, why it should have been also extended to angel investors, is that when a startup is at its nascent stage, to determine the fair market value itself is, you know, it's not challenging, but it's an interesting concept. But, you know, we can leave it at that, and we'll welcome the exemption at least, which has been extended to incubators.
Thank you. Now, again, that reminds me, goes back to the Prime Minister's speech. At least in his speech, it didn't seem to us that they are only limiting to incubators. It seemed to us that they are basically they are opening this benefit to everyone who invests in startups. That was the way Prime Minister presented it. However, the action plan talked only about incubators. We don't know whether that was intentional or it was an example. And maybe when the actual tax exemption comes in the tax law, whether they will extend it to others also, we hope they do. We will try to at least present to the government that they should, because fundamental issue really is that incubators play a very, very minimal role compared to angels and others in terms of seed investment. Of course, incubators play a big role, but angels in terms of investment, seed investment, angels play a larger role. Now, having said it, we don't think incubators have been defined. At least there's no intention for incubators to be defined. So the question really is that can even angel be an incubator? Maybe in a lot of cases, yes. You know, can there be only one incubator, or there can be multiple incubators, which we can say are there? Because incubator is someone who basically gives infrastructure, mentors, and otherwise provides support. So, is that the position one can take? Again, we'll wait till we see the fine print. But this is one aspect which we will need to address with the government. Let us move ahead let's go beyond tax. If you see, in India, right, it takes, as of today, it takes about 20 to 30 days to incorporate a company. But it takes close to 2 years to shut out the company because it needs to go to the court, and the whole process which follows. And as a result, a lot of companies remain without being shut off. Now, as you know, 9 out of 10 startups fail, which means if it is very critical for a startup to be incorporated, then it is critical for a startup which has failed to be wound up and closed, so that there is, the founders are able to restart their whole aspect and move on into other things. With this background, Karthik, can you tell us that how fact that failing in India needs to be made easier, where entrepreneurs are free to take risk and start over on failure? What do you think the reforms for making exit for startups easier?
So in terms of exits for entrepreneurs, so the government in December 2015 introduced the Insolvency and Bankruptcy Bill in Parliament, which has been in Parliament since December 2015, and given the current impasse, it's not become law yet. But amongst the proposals which the bill contains is a proposal for a fast track liquidation, which is essentially a 90-day winding up period. But whilst this is great news that it's also going to be extended to startups, what will need to be kept in mind is the fact that timelines will need to be a little more realistic, because in terms of the fact that, the adjudicating authority, which is again a tribunal, which is the National Company Law Tribunal, when it will be notified, will need to appoint an officer who is an insolvency officer with respect to startups. And this is the text of the action plan, which says that this officer within 6 months must liquidate all the assets of the company. And the caveat to this again is the fact that the company, the startup in this sense, must have a simple debt structure to provide for this easy exit.
Thank you, Karthik. Huzaifa, over to you. Do you think what government has covered in action plan is enough, or do you think there are things which government should have covered in their action plan?
Sure, thanks. The action plan as laid out, there have been a lot of great things which have come up in terms of the incubation funds, in terms of the tax rebates, in terms of the other policy reforms which have been suggested. The ships, of course, seem to be sailing in the right direction. But it would have been great if a certain key points or certain key areas could have also been touched upon, specifically in relation to startups and the way they are structured. I think one big one was, we were hoping that there would have been some guidance or clarity on the ESOP front, right, the stock options. Considering the way the regime under the company law is, under the new law, Companies Act 2013, there are certain restrictions which are placed in which stock options can be granted to a company's mentor, a company's director, a company's consultants. In the normal pan world, it would have been okay, but startups are a bit different, right? That when you're growing, there are a lot of people who are associated with the startup, which leads to its success story. Apart from, of course, the key employees and the promoters and the founders, mentors and advisors play an equally important role. In the West, we've seen that most of these mentors, advisors, are given stock options, and they help take the startup to a certain level. Having said that, there are restrictions under Indian laws to do that, and the startup action plan has not addressed the same. The other bit on the ESOP front was taxation of stock options. In India, ESOPs have a dual layer of taxation. One is at the time of exercise, whenever ESOPs are exercised by the employees. There is a tax on the delta between the exercise of the strike price and the fair market value. And the second layer of taxation comes actually when he exits or when he sells those stock options. Specifically on this, it was hoped that the dual layer of taxation on ESOPs would have been limited or reduced just to one. That is only at the time of exit or sale by the employees of those stock options. So, on this one, at least we were hoping that there would have been some clarity or some relaxation, but it's not. But in the larger scheme and, the other reforms proposed, I think this just, you just need to bite the bullet on this one.
Thank you, Zeta. So, as Zeta mentioned, I think stock option was one which was clearly missed, especially, current restriction on giving stock option to promoters or founders and to non-employees is a big miss in this particular thing, which could have easily been done. We'll be pushing government, we all should be pushing government to try to get this thing done. Hopefully government will do it soon. The other thing which was, in my view, missed, which could have been easily done, is in order for startups to easily access foreign capital, government has a regime on called foreign venture capital investment regime. That regime gives certain benefits for venture capitalists to invest in startups. However, the benefits are only available to sectors which are mine sectors, which were identified in 2008 or 2009. And that list has not been changed after that period. As we know that newer and newer areas keep on coming, newer and newer areas require more dynamic listing. And we are proposing to the government that instead of having a positive list of nine sectors, government should have a negative list, which means that if it is if the equity industry is not mentioned, then foreign venture capital investment vehicle can invest in those companies and get benefits which government has given under FCCI. Unfortunately, it does not come in. And, you know, if that is something which is going to take time, then we at least hope that government will include the startup as defined under the action plan to be part of the positive list of FCCI's investment return. Now, if that happens, that will definitely increase the interest by venture capitalists to invest in startups as FCCI return does give some significant waiver on some significant benefits, including waiver on action control regulation, which is one of the major area of concern, which also has not been addressed by the action plan, and also it will it allows them to if a company goes public at that point of time, it allows them to basically not have any restrictive period for selling the shares if they are holding the shares for more than 1 year. Now that again is a significant benefit which one can get. So that benefit of FCCI definitely increases the attractiveness of a startup. Hopefully government will look at it sooner than later. Other thing which government mentioned which may be important, which is likely to be implemented along with this, is they have said that a lot of exchange control related filings will be online now. So for example, if a foreign company invests in an Indian company, then they will have to file Form FCGPR, FIRC, etc. For purpose under for exchange control purposes. If they sell to an Indian shareholder or if an Indian shareholder sells to a foreign company, then they need to file Form FCTR. Currently, all these files are in paper. What government is doing is they are making it online and easier, so that the compliance becomes easier, which is again a welcome move. We do not know how it will be implemented at this point in time, but there is one thing which they announced that they will do it. Having said it, few other things we were hoping were missed. While equity is a preferred way for startups to get funded, debt is also another alternative which we would have hoped they would have been able to take it much more easily. We had hoped that they would have relaxed the ability for startups to take debt, which we have not seen in this particular thing. There are restrictions under the Companies Act and under exchange control to take a debt from someone who is not a shareholder or a director, or take a debt from someone who is not an Indian resident. So relaxation at that level would have been a welcome, which was something which was missed out. There were many other things which we were hoping would come in and which were missed out. But again, the way we are looking at it, that this is a first step, it's a journey. The government has announced the intention to help startups. It has announced that they will unobstacle startups to grow. The intention is very good. The first step is good. But there is a lot more which government should do before this particular benefit comes across to startups. We are really hoping that government takes this much further and announces more relaxation for startups if government is serious in creating more unicorns in India. With this, I conclude our discussion on startups and open up for question and answer.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles.
So I have a question. Looking at it from a startup's perspective, this action plan, let's assume that the startup is unlikely to break even or make substantial profits in the first 3 years of its operation. Do you really believe that there is anything in the action plan for a startup to be really excited about, you know, at least at this stage? The way I read the sort of action plan, the way I kind of looked at it from a startup's perspective, it appeared that there was not really much benefit, and given the whole procedural hassles of, you know, trying to get a registration certificate or a confirmation from the government that yes, it is an innovative startup, disclosing all your sort of, you know, intellectual property at the time of application and those kind of things, I would be more sort of worried to actually go the whole route if there isn't really too much of a benefit if you look at it. So what's your perspective in terms of, you know, how do you read the action plan at this stage, largely from a startup perspective?
Sorry, let me address this question. I think it's a very good question. If you ask me, I was slightly disappointed when I heard the list or the announcement. I think there are a few interesting aspects which are there. As I said, for example, you gave an example of tax, right? I don't think, in my view, most startups will not make profit in first 3 years. But there will still be many startups which may make profit in first 3 years. In fact, I know of at least few startups which are already breaking even and will be profitable in the first year itself. So those kind of startups will definitely take benefit of the 3 year tax exemption. Secondly, there are many smaller ones, but they are welcome exemptions. For example, public procurement, right? This is a big thing, right? Government is biggest customer, and if a startup is able to go and pitch and bid for a tender, I think it may be a, this itself may be a big reason why startups will go ahead and register. Third is the certification, right? All said and done, if there's no threat of inspectors coming in and harassing you, that also would be a good incentive for a startup to go and register. Fourth point, why I would go and register if I was a startup, is that I believe that, and this is what I made abundantly clear in my discussion, throughout my discussion, is that this is the first step. I believe that government will keep on announcing more and more reforms over a period of time. If I registered myself and government has announced more reforms, I will automatically get benefit of those reforms. So would I not go and take it up? Or rather I wait and, you know, if new reforms are announced, then I go and take it up. I mean, my view would be that I would rather go and take it up now, or rather register myself now. What is the downside? I mean, there's no downside of registering.
So,
my view. Just to clarify, and thanks for the sort of view, quite helpful. Just to clarify, the self-certification in relation to labor laws, they mentioned about 6 labor laws, if I'm not mistaken. Is the self-certification limited only to those 6 labor laws? So for all the other labor laws, is the view that you'll have to continue with your normal compliances in terms of maintaining registers and filing forms and those kind of things?
Yeah, you are right. It is only limited to the signature. That's what we have action plan says. So that's why we believe that it's just a start. It is not, in fact, many of the crucial ones are missing. But I think there are
Taking
orders right now.
Yeah,
thank
you. Thank you.
Also, just to add on the software front, right, if you go through the entire action plan, there is an environment which is fostering growth. So they try to create an ecosystem, right? They've started incubation labs, they've started innovation centers, they've started collaboration platforms, they are, you know, harnessing the Make in India initiative. They've also, you know, promised research parks. Now, that, you know, that's the soft ecosystem which is being promised in this action plan, which is great, right, for the startups. Not only you get access to a lot of people, but it also acts as a melting pot for ideas. It acts as a melting pot for growth. It also would act as a melting pot for investors, infrastructure. So I think the soft benefits also to all of this are, awesome.
And just to add to that, so another possible benefit, and again, this is all depend on what the interplay of the definition of a startup is, that from at least the way it's currently drafted, in the event that, your investors are able to claim benefits for having invested only in a startup which has got this certification, from that perspective, if you get this certification, it opens you up to a much wider pool of capital that you could possibly tap.
And I think Huzaifa made a very interesting point. I mean, we have only discussed in our last 1 hour is on the policy side and on what is startup and what benefits they are getting. But the part B of the whole policy is the infrastructure the government is building, including research park, which Huzaifa mentioned. I think that benefit, a lot of startups will be able to take the benefit of those infrastructure, and which in my view will also be something which will be useful to many.
Thank you. So we have a question from the line of Varun Parekh from Wealthy. Please go ahead.
I actually had a couple of questions. First one was, will the startup action plan be applicable for startups that are incorporated prior to April 16, or do all the provisions lapse if you're incorporated prior to April 16?
I will answer that question. The action plan is silent on that particular one.
Okay.
My view, intention is that even if it was incorporated prior to 2016,
yeah,
as long as you are eligible under the definition, you should get the benefit.
Okay. And thanks for that. The second one was on the capital gains exemption on sale of property. Does that necessarily have to be property of the founder or the equity shareholders? Say, for example, if the founder is holding some shares in his HUF or in the wife's name, if he sells that and uses that to invest funds in his business, is that permissible for capital gains exemption, or does it have to be his personal assets?
Sure.
Anyone wants to go?
Why don't you go? I'll just add it.
Okay. So the way I understand is in the current section, the way it is defined, and that if you sell property, then you have to invest in a property within the predefined period in the same person, in the same
correct
way, who has invested will have to invest, which means if you are the owner of the property, you sell, make gains, and then you reinvest. It has to be you only who has to reinvest. If your wife sells the property, your wife has to invest. If your parents sell the property, they have to invest, and not you. That same concept will apply in this particular field also, which means that if anyone sells the property, the same shareholder or the same owner would have to become a shareholder when they invest in a startup.
Sure. Just to add, sir, I think the intention behind this is the exemption is to be granted to the investor, right? So the
right
investor can be, and the thing is that we'll have to wait to see how the current Section 54 GB is extended to startups. But at least the way it works right now, the way it would work is that once you sell a property, you have to invest it. There can be anyone who sells a property, he needs to invest it into a startup.
Right.
And the startup needs to use the funds that it has received to purchase software or computers.
Okay.
So to that extent, the benefit would be to the investor who's selling this property. So it could, to that extent, it could be the founder or the founder's wife who's invested into a startup which is using it for the end result, which is purchase of computer or computer software.
Right, and does this investment have to come into the startup by way of equity, or could it be an unsecured loan given to the startup to fund its operations?
Again, this is purely conjecture at this point in time because we don't know how it will play out, but at least the way
okay.
it currently reads, it's supposed to be securities, shares in that sense.
Okay. So it has to be, so you have to become a part owner, you have to invest in equity into the startup.
That's correct.
Yeah, it uses the word investments and invested.
Right.
But I think we'll just wait for the fine print on that.
Sure. All right. Thanks so much. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nag Parmeshwaran. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for this session, Vaibhav. I have a couple of questions. Do you see an opportunity to give further feedback before the actual policy comes out? And if yes, how do we approach this?
So while government has not specifically created a window or anyone to give feedback, the way we are doing it is we are trying to see if association like NASCOM or TIE has played an important role in the first place in pushing government to come with an action plan. Whether those associations can go back to the government and say, thank you for what you have done, but we feel that if you do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then it will help. This is something which I'm personally seeing and trying to talk to this association and see if we can make the presentation. There's already a discussion going on, at least at this level, between all the players, including NASCOM and TAI. Just as a background, I have been involved in both the association and trying to help them on the policy front. So I'm in touch with them. Hopefully, we will be able to have them talk to the government. If you want to go and add your bit, please reach out to any association you are part of and mobilize the additional liberalization which you would want to see from the government.
Excellent. Thanks. Thanks, Vaibhav. I had one more point to take some advice from you. You mentioned about certain set of benefits and room for incubators to operate. Is that available to a company which already operates an existing incubator for startups? And how will that play out?
I think existing incubators also will get benefit. The way I understand is if government has invested in that incubator or government has recognized that incubator, then that incubator will be able to take benefit from the action plan. So government will maybe come up with a list of incubators who they recognize, and then if it's part of recognized incubator, then you will be able to.
Okay, it has to be a part of some existing network, is it?
I think incubators have to be recognized by the government at the minimum.
Okay. No, so I think you made a great point at the beginning because one of the fundamental issues is going to be what is innovation, and number two, why should innovators share information with agencies to get certified, because that is actually losing the big advantage of speed and surprise, and the ideas being out there in the market.
No, also, so that, and one more point is that all these benefits, right? Startup needs when they don't have any support, right? A startup which is VC funded, they can do compliance, right? They have money now to do compliance. They have power to hire people to do compliance, right? Startup which has incubators, already have a lot of things taken care of. The startup which has just started and has no support, which is still 5-6 months away from getting a venture capital. Investment, those people do not get benefit is one of the biggest drawback of the action plan. This is something which we feel that needs to be remedied, otherwise it will cut off startups when the benefit when they need the most.
That's an excellent point, Vaibhav. So thanks a lot again for this session to you and your team members. Very useful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one. As we have no further questions from the participants, I would like to hand the floor over to Mr. Vaibhav Pandey for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thank you. First of all, thank you everyone being there. We had an interesting discussion, interesting question. Thank you for your questions. And we are also close to our closing time. So thank you for managing everything on a timely basis. With this, I would like to close the session. And in case there are any questions which comes up later on, feel free to reach out to us on our email. We'll be happy to answer them, if any.
Thank you very much, members of the management.
Thank you.
On behalf of Nishit Desai Associates, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.